Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stasia Olkowski.
Today is December 11th, 2023, and we are using the theme of preparation or preparing for Kwanzaa. And some of us are in a dither.
And some of us are waiting to be enlightened and to not say anything incorrect on the radio.
Okay. It's going to be an interesting morning. How are you, Stash?
I'm fine. And really, was it a good weekend? Not good if you're a sports fan like me, who seems to be picking the wrong teams lately, at least this week. This week, I haven't picked the right team in any game I watched.
You're watching the wrong games.
Well, I even picked the favorites in a couple of them. It didn't matter. They were upset. So this was not a weekend. This was a weekend where I'm glad I've never reached into my wallet and made a bet, like, you know, some people on the phone or anything else like that. Because this is one of those weeks when I would have been, you know, trying to mortgage the car or something. I've never gotten into gambling, so. But this has been a nice weekend. Terry and I spent a lot of time this weekend talking about lots of nice things and just relaxing and enjoying some pleasant time and reading. I started working on what we talked about at the last storytelling thing. I started working on my story about Irina and making serious notes and stuff. So I've gotten pretty excited about doing a story about this lady from Poland.
All right, I look forward to hearing that.
Mm-hmm. I hope.
I thought we should start by thanking Andy Offit Irwin for opening the show and playing Tarry Here, singing Tarry Here for us.
It's always good to remember that.
Yeah, it's a good way to open the show.
Right. And I'm glad the snow didn't show up.
Oh, here. We have snow.
You did? No, yeah, we didn't much. Have any.
Just a dusting, but it was enough to shock me.
Right, we didn't have any here. It was wet last night, but
grass was covered with snow when I woke up. All gone now, but
amazing. And here we are, just 20 miles away, and we didn't have any.
Yeah,
it was wet last night. In fact, we sleep with the window open for about an inch or two, and I could hear the rain during the night tapping on the windowsill. You know, but. Good. I'm glad it's dry out here. It's nice. So,
well, it seems as if you probably expect me to get started.
Yes, I do.
On our preparing for Kwanzaa show today. So I will do that. I'm going to start with a children's book called Seven Candles for Kwanzaa by the Pinckneys, Andrea Davis Pinckney and Brian Pinckney. It's a picture book. It was published by Scholastic, and I think a lot of families probably have it, but it's a really good way to start. It's an introduction. And then I have a couple other little stories to tell and lots of background information if our listeners are interested in learning more about the history of Kwanzaa and what it's all about.
Okay. Can you give me a time check?
I have 3 minutes and 30 seconds.
Okay. That's good.
that doesn't mean it's true. That's just
what my timer says. I was thinking 4 minutes. Okay. Good. All right.
So in this book, Seven Candles for Kwanzaa by Andrea Davis Pinkney and Brian Pinkney, it starts with a note to readers about Kwanzaa being an American holiday inspired by African traditions. And they're very clear. It's not intended as a religious holiday or a political holiday or to celebrate any heroes. It's not a substitute for Christmas. It's not intended to overlap with Hanukkah or get confused with Hanukkah. It's a 7-day festival that runs from December 26th through January 1st. And each of those days is related to one of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. People of African descent use the holiday to rejoice in their ancestors and the values that have been passed on to them by those ancestors. Kwanzaa is a Swahili word or a Kiswahili word meaning first fruits. And when you spell out Kwanzaa, K-W-A-N-Z-A is the Swahili spelling, but the founders added an extra A at the end so that there would be seven letters because there are seven principles for Kwanzaa. So Kwanzaa's origins are in the first fruit harvest, the agricultural harvest that have been observed in Africa for, probably thousands of years. And many of these celebrations lasted 7 days. Some of them occur about this time of year in late December or are celebrated in early January. So the dates for Kwanzaa here in this country correspond to those ancient African harvest festivals. But Kwanzaa in this country was created in 1966 by Dr. Coringa, who was chair and professor of Black Studies at the California State University, Long Beach, and executive director of the Institute of Pan-African Studies. And since I've been talking about this to the general public and to my family, who were asking questions about Kwanzaa, I sometimes get questions about that phrase, Pan-African. What does that mean? So I'll just say a word about that. That's a reference to the fact that African nations, African communities, African civilizations even, have things in common simply from sharing the continent of Africa. And when Africans, especially Black Africans, leave the continent, they constitute a diaspora. Some of that travel, some of that removal from Africa was not their choice. Many Black Africans were enslaved. And that led to a sense of an African community across the world, certainly across the continent of Africa, but also now all around the world. And so Pan-Africanism refers to that sense of community that many Black Africans and many Black African Americans feel a kinship to the continent of Africa and want to remember where our ancestors came from. The seven principles of Kwanzaa are at the heart of the celebration. And one of the resources that I use when I'm talking about Kwanzaa is Cedric McClester's book called Kwanzaa and subtitled Everything You Always Wanted to Know But Didn't Know Where to Ask. And I've since discovering this book, I've also discovered that lots of the members of the GRIO Circle of Maryland, the Black Storytelling Association, that's headquartered in Baltimore for this state. We are an affiliate of the national group called the National Association of Black Storytellers, but many GRIOs from Maryland use the same book. It's a popular book. I have the 1985 edition, but it's been revised several times. There's a 1994 and a 1997, I believe, So it has been revised several times. Cedric McClester was one of the early publicizers of the holiday. And as a scholar and a journalist and a poet, he's done a lot to spread the word about Kwanzaa. So this children's book that I'm sharing with our listeners begins saying that Kwanzaa is like a family day in the park, and Thanksgiving and a birthday all rolled into one. Kwanzaa is a joyous African-American holiday that begins on December 26th and lasts through the first day of January. That name, that vocabulary, Kwanzaa, comes from the East African language of Swahili, and it means first fruits of the harvest. Since ancient times, in countries all over Africa, families have joined together to celebrate the end of the harvest and the beginning of the new planting season, when vegetables, yams, and fruits are all ripe for gathering. Families rejoice in a first fruits festival. But Kwanzaa is a holiday that began in America, in this country. It's a time when people whose ancestors came from Africa celebrate their African heritage. And to get ready for the holiday, families decorate our homes with Kwanzaa symbols. There are seven primary Kwanzaa symbols. There's Mkeka, which is a straw placemat or a placemat made of natural materials that goes on the table first. And then Mkeka is woven with beautiful patterns. It's meant to be a thing of beauty, and it represents tradition. Muhindi is corn. And during Kwanzaa, one ear of corn is placed on the mkeke for each child in the family. Families that have many children put lots of corn on their mkeke, along with apples, bananas, nuts, pears, and yams to represent those first fruits and remember the abundance of nature. These fruits and vegetables are all called mazao, which means crops. Kwanzaa gifts are sometimes shared. They're not shared in every family. Not every family has a gift tradition with Kwanzaa, but many do. And those gifts, if they're part of the Kwanzaa celebration, are called zawadi. Sometimes a homemade doll with button eyes or a necklace made of homemade beads, maybe a homemade storybook with folk tales from Africa. Those are the kinds of zawadi, the kinds of gifts that are used to illustrate African ancestry or to celebrate our traditions. Grown-ups often give gifts to children to reward them for promises they've made and kept throughout the year. But children also give Kwanzaa gifts to adults and to fellow siblings or relatives. One of the other items that's placed on the table is a kinara, a candle holder that holds seven candles. And that usually the Kwanzaa candles include a black candle in the middle that celebrates the race, that celebrates Black Africans. And there are three red candles on the left and three green candles on the right. And each of those candles is lit on a different night of the 7 days of Kwanzaa, beginning with the black candle in the middle. The seven days each celebrate a Kwanzaa principle, and those principles are called Nguzo Saba. N-G-U-Z-O, Nguzo Saba, S-A-B-A. And those values come from ancient traditions held by groups of people, by communities, by nations all over Africa. And that these beliefs help us learn to learn our history, to achieve our goals, and to grow as human beings. So on that first day of Kwanzaa, December 21st, the black candle is set alight to celebrate the first principle, Umoja. Umoja means unity. And as an illustration of Umoja or unity, families gather together on that day to begin the celebration. They talk about their feelings and ideas about Kwanzaa, and they relax together, just enjoying being together. There can be funny stories told, there can be historic stories told, but the question that is always asked on that night is Habari Gani, Habari Gani. And that's a Kwanzaa greeting that translates from the Swahili, what's the news? What's happening? And that's how each Kwanzaa evening is celebrated, to begin with that question. And that's when someone will speak up and talk about the Kwanzaa principle for that day. Habari Gani. The first principle is always Umoja. On the second day of Kwanzaa, when the second candle is lit, and I guess I forgot to say that the candles are lit alternating red and green. So on the second night, a red candle is lit. And that represents the second principle, which is the most interesting of all the vocabulary words of the principle of the seven principles. It's kujichagalia, kujichagalia. And it took me a long time to learn to say that word without stumbling. Kujichagalia. Kajalia means self-determination. That means that we're learning to set up traditions that help us figure out who we are and to identify ourselves rather than let other people tell us who we are. So we can use clothing to help us establish our identities. We can think about the way we learn things. We can think of what we want to learn. We can set up family traditions that reinforce who we want to be. But it's about finding your identity and figuring out who you are and who you want to become. Kujichaguli. On the third night, when we ask Habari Gani, what's the news, what's happening, we talk about Ujima, collective work and responsibility. Ujima is the Kwanzaa day to light a green candle and work together to get a family chore done. Like in this book, it says stripping down an old wooden chair and giving it a fresh coat of paint, but it could be anything that your family does together. It's about working together to accomplish a goal. When the fourth day of Kwanzaa comes, it's time to celebrate Ujamaa or Ujamaa. Some people pronounce the double A, which stands for cooperative economics. That's the Swahili word for cooperative work. For Ujamaa, we save up our coins for a whole year to buy a family gift that everyone can share, like a family clock or a big mirror for the hallway. And on Ujamaa Day, a red candle glows bright in the kinara. My family did not do that, but I've heard of other families who do that. They have a big bank maybe in the family room, and people put change in it as often as they can and decide how they're going to use that money when Kwanzaa comes in. Nia is the fifth Kwanzaa principle. And the second green candle is lit on that day. It stands for purpose. It stands for having a goal and knowing what your purpose in life is. So some people dream of life as an astronomer, this children's book says. An astronomer who peers at stars nestled in the dark night sky, or a trumpet player who bebops in a swinging jazz band. Nia, our purpose, is to do what makes us glad to be who we are. The purpose in life. on the sixth day, Kuomba is the celebration. Kuomba is the principle for the sixth day, and it means creativity in all ways possible. That families during Kwanzaa think about how to celebrate creativity, Kuomba, every day. Sometimes we make up dances to perform for friends. Some dances tell stories about the history of people who live in Africa. Other dancers are just for fun. Other people make little tokens out of clay or recite favorite poems as ways to express Kuomba. Planting seedlings on the windowsill and nurturing them is another way to celebrate Kuomba. So that third red candle is shining to celebrate your creativity. The final and seventh Kwanzaa principle is Imani, and it stands for faith. This is probably my favorite of the seven principles. To have faith is to believe that goodwill will happen. To show our belief in a happy holiday, we burn the last green Kwanzaa candle. Kwanzaa, karamu. In Swahili, it's usually the next to last syllable of each word that has the emphasis in the word. And that one of the reasons that Swahili is such a popular language in Africa on the continent is because it's used as a lingua franca. It was used by traders for centuries. And it has easy to learn grammar, and often the pronunciation is pretty easy. Karamu is the feast, the end of the celebration, at the end of the 7 days. There's a big dinner, a family dinner, and traditionally African-American and African foods are served, like sweet potatoes and collard greens. To begin the karamu, a grown-up spills a few drops of water from the kikombe cha umoja, the family's Kwanzaa cup or goblet, and each droplet honors our African ancestors. Everyone takes a little sip from the cup or sprinkles some of the water on a growing plant. To celebrate these warm feelings of family unity. And then thanks are given for delicious food, and the Kwanzaa meal is served. That's called the libation, that celebration, that introduction to the meal, where water is spilled or poured or drunk, and the celebration starts. After dinner, that's really maybe the best part of the whole week, because everyone's celebrating and dancing and relaxing after a good meal, celebrating a happy. So Stosh.
Yes.
That's the storybook called Seven Candles for Kwanzaa by Andrea Davis Pinkney and Brian Pinkney, which I just happen to have in my house. But I'm wondering if you have any questions so far.
Oh, boy.
Yes, you have a whole list.
Do.
I could see you writing.
Well, I do. I was using my kinetic learning skills here.
All right.
Okay. I did some reading over the weekend, and after I finished the reading, I decided I'm just going to ask Fanny.
Well, it's not like I have all the answers. I'm still learning myself.
I understand, but you know, you're a bit closer to this than I am. I would say by a couple thousand miles. Okay, but here's what I wanted to ask, Melissa. One of the things is your description, which you answered one of my first questions, the sense of community, the Pan-American sense of community. I'm a little slow sometimes, but as you were talking about that, the people in America, especially since it started in America, were thinking about their ancestors in Africa and until you talked about that, I had in my mind, probably this is, I'm just admitting ignorance. Okay. I would wonder, why would somebody get, that lived in, you know, Indiana or Missouri or something like that, who knew that they were from Africa, back from their ancestors and all, why would they care about that? And why would they have feelings about it? Until you started describing that, and you didn't say a whole lot, but you said enough that made so much sense to me, because in 2016, I think that's the correct year, my wife and I took a trip to Poland, and my grandparents were both Polish, my sets of grandparents, and my father was the first generation in America. And when we were in Poland, I this is the absolute truth. The day before we were going to leave, I said to my wife, I could easily stay here. I felt so good in Poland. And it wasn't because of anything super special, but people were very nice. They, I thought some of their customs were very strange. You had to pay to use the public restroom, which I thought was, I thought, whoa, they should be a rich country. but my sense was that I can remember feeling I was home. And it wasn't because like beautiful castles or anything like that. The countryside, some of the small towns we drove through, we were on a bus tour, and we went to five major stops and stayed overnight once, one or two nights at different places. And it was a wonderful tour, but we passed through a lot of small places, and along the way, sometimes the tour guide was wonderful. She would have the bus pull over, and she would say, this is a special stop. One of my favorite places to stop and get some refreshments and take and just relax a little bit. And it was a little place on the side of the road, not so little that it was tiny, but it was kind of like a large McDonald's or something like that would be in America, you know, larger than the normal in everyday place. And it was wonderful. They had things for sale and food and all kind of things, and picnic tables, and you could just sit and relax. And I remember that great sense in my inside that I felt like I could really live here. Now, I don't know how that sense would have been if I'd stayed for a month or two, because I'm sure maybe, you know, there would be things, and since you know me, you would understand this easily, that I would say, what? Why are you going to do that? And stuff. But the people were kind. They love ice cream. and we learned that the shops were often labeled with the word Lodi, L-O-D-I. And that was, Lodi was my mother-in-law's first name. And when we first saw that, I thought, what's that for? And then Terry looked in the book and said, oh, that's an ice cream shop. Well, we visited every place we went. We visited every ice cream shop we stopped by. When we went for a walk, we'd say, oh, let's stop in here and get an ice cream. So anyway, I do understand that sense of community very much, because it's the only place I've ever been in the world where I felt that, more so than any place in America. I've never felt that here.
And you really, that connection to Poland really didn't occur to you until this morning when you heard me talking?
The connection of African Americans to Africa,
right,
didn't make sense to me until I reflected on my own experience. I mean, I never compared it before, because mm-hmm. until 2016 I had no experience of that,
right. And that occurred to you this morning, not in the past when you'd heard about?
Well, I did. Kwanzaa. It did occur to me that I, you know, about my sense about Poland, but I didn't attach it to anyone else's sense of someplace else.
Ah, okay.
You know, it was a very narrow-minded thing. All right, just because I hadn't explored it, and I hadn't met anybody like you, who could broaden. I'm serious. Who could, you know, get me to look at things in a different way?
I've had other
influences. Yeah, and I was, and still, I am amazed at that. I'm amazed that, and I guess my puzzlement still is. Some people who would celebrate that are people that have never been to Africa.
Right.
And, okay, and so and my first thought was they should go. If they really want to experience that feeling that I had, which I think I would never have experienced if I hadn't gone to Poland.
Right.
You know, I mean, I can remember a couple of times standing, one of the places I stood in one of the cities in a large plaza, like lots of people walking back and forth. And I was just overwhelmed by the different things I was seeing. And, you know, about there were statues there and stuff. And they weren't even famous statues. But then I saw places that were famous to me in my mind, you know, as a scientist, as a person who studied chemistry and astronomy and math. Copernicus's house, great Polish astronomer from centuries and centuries ago that I'd studied about and always admired and everything. Standing in front of his house was an overwhelming experience. It wasn't a word anymore. It wasn't just an idea. It was a real place where this real man had lived. And so it made a lot of sense. And so it makes the celebration of the Pan-Americans, the Pan-Americanism thing, makes more sense.
Pan-African.
Pan-African. Yes. How about that? I even messed that up. Unintentionally.
That's amazing, Sash. I really appreciate your sharing this because it explains so much about what's happening in the world and what could happen in the world to change people's perspective. I think one of the reasons that Kwanzaa has been embraced so enthusiastically by the African American community and other diaspora communities around the world is that there's always this sense of not belonging, of feeling held at arm's length. And
absolutely.
So Kwanzaa is the, for many people, Kwanzaa is the first time to feel like here is a tradition that really belongs to me personally, and where the people, ancestors, you know, for thousands of years belong to me. I understand where I came from, kind of thing.
This discussion is a great learning experience. One of the things that you said earlier, I can't repeat the words. I could if I practice a lot of times, but I really try not to use other people's language unless I've gotten a little bit of a lesson on how to say it, because there's nothing worse than mispronouncing things that are important to other people. But you said something about the question that is asked each time, and it's asked each for each of the days.
Uh-huh.
And there is a Polish expression that and you said it's like, what's happening, or something like that. Well, there's a Polish expression that I use sometimes, that I even joked with my daughter recently. She's teaching elementary age students up to sixth grade. She's teaching Spanish. And I said, if you want to get their attention some morning, you should just walk in and say, Yakshamash. And that's a Polish expression. And another shorter version is jak tam. And both of them are a way of greeting somebody either on the street or in a building or someplace in the classroom. And all it means is, what's up? You know, that's a modern, that's an American expression. You know, what's up?
Right.
How's it, you know? And that struck me as another commonality with humans, you know?
Yeah.
The desire to know what's going on. And so.
And to know the phrase to ask. So you can ask.
Yeah, that's right. That's neat, you know? I don't think my daughter has done it with her class yet, but I hope she will sometime. I just think that's an interesting thing to do. And I did that in chemistry class a couple of times. That's what say, what's he saying? What's he talking about? And then I had to explain to him, I did not have, brain problems. I didn't have an explosion in my head that morning. It's just, I was trying to get their attention. Which worked.
Yes, I'm sure it did.
And your explanation of all that, I really did enjoy the way you explained about the candles and that they alternate and the black and green and red. And I understand that because black and green and red, it seems to me that there's a pretty common in a lot of different flags in the African nations. Mm-hmm. Not all of them, of course, but, you know. And anyway, this is very interesting. I'm learning. And I'm glad we're doing this. So, I don't expect you to do something about Poland just because of this. But
I would love to visit Poland.
Oh.
Not right this minute, but yeah.
No, sometime. But I truly do think you would, and, you know, I understand why anybody wants to visit different countries. It's fascinating. I'm sure if I went to Iceland, I'd be fascinated by everything that happened there. You know, that is one of the places I thought about I would like to go to. But my other thought right away is, I'm happy right where I'm sitting. I think that's an age thing. I think I'm finally understanding why there's all this talk about older people sitting on the porch. Because in the past few years, ever since we moved to Sharpsburg, more so than any other place I've lived, I love sitting on the porch or on our patio. I just love it. It's one of my favorite activities.
So. Well, and I'm sure some of that had to do with ice cream, the fact that you lived next door to the ice cream shop.
Yeah.
And we had a line of ice cream eaters going by.
And we would meet people and it would be pleasant and all. And we had a nice place to sit. The porch was nice. We could see the immediate neighborhood and kind of gossip about with my wife and I I would gossip maybe. She would make observations. I would gossip about what was going on in the neighborhood and all. But yeah.
And you still have a really nice porch where you can sit and watch the neighborhood.
Yeah. So.
I was in Martinsburg this weekend and I thought about stopping, but as usual, I was rushing.
Oh, you should have stopped. You never know. You might have caught us in a good mood. We would have invited you in.
For ice cream.
or for all kinds of things. And I think Fanny did send you something about
an invitation. You. Yeah. We're going to have dinner together.
That'd be wonderful.
That will be fun.
Because, and maybe your husband and my wife will talk a lot at dinner, and then you and I will take a break.
That would be fun too.
Yes, it would.
Well, I want to tell our listeners, just in case they're wondering what the heck they're listening to, that this is the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org, and we are broadcasting from Martinsburg, West Virginia, where Stosh is, Bolivar, West Virginia, where our station manager is, and Hagerstown, Maryland, where I am currently sitting.
So I do have a couple more puzzling questions.
Yeah.
Why do you... I understand because I read it at the beginning. This was meant not to be an imitation of the Christian holidays. And mm-hmm. I didn't understand that because it didn't explain it very well in what I read different stuff. It didn't explain it in, I guess I didn't catch it easily. But it's based historically on celebrations in Africa that had nothing to do with Christianity.
That's right. Yes.
Or anything. It had to do with the harvest mm-hmm. and it had to do with a certain time of year. And that was always done like in January or around that time of year.
Well, depending, you know, Africa's a huge continent. So
it depends on harvest time. It's fluid. Yeah. Okay. And so that makes sense because I thought if you didn't want to, here's my, you know, I would like to think of it as my scientific brain. If you didn't want it to be thought of as an imitation of Christmas or Hanukkah, why do it at Christmas time? But that cleared it up. So now I don't have that like roadblock in my head, which is good because that's what I was wondering. And my other question is, how was it received at first?
I think it was slow to get going. It was really when I, you know, I'd heard about Kwanzaa, but my family didn't celebrate when I was a kid. You know, it wasn't started till I was in my mid-teens, 1966. And I don't remember my father mentioning Kwanzaa in that time period. It wasn't until much later that my family started recognizing the holiday and I began hearing friends and extended family talk about it. So I think it was slow to get started Dr. Karenga, who founded the holiday or began the holiday, was a fairly radical Black activist. And so I think it was that community of the Black is beautiful people who were trying to come up with alternatives for their children to the white consumer culture that they saw going on around them. And it was a way of helping their children feel more comfortable in their own skins and helping young people recognize the achievements of African achievements of African nations and of African culture, and to celebrate all the wonder. I mean, there were amazing scientific discoveries and artistic creations going on in Africa.
Oh yeah.
We're only beginning to talk about in this country, but those Black activists that was part of what was fueling their desire for a celebration like Kwanzaa. So I think it answered a need at the time, but it took a while for the larger African American community to embrace it. It wasn't until they saw the difference that it made for young people in hearing about African achievements. So like celebrating the ancient universities of Africa, Black African universities, that was a fairly recent topic of conversation, and that helped fuel Kwanzaa as well.
I guess this would be in families, but in general, in a community maybe, do they celebrate also the because there are a great many discoveries in America by Africans who mm-hmm. were African Americans. I mean, in medicine, in, you know, there are a number of different things that Africans have done in medicine that make a world of difference in our world,
mm-hmm. you know. Absolutely,
interesting.
When I sent you my original email talking about this as a theme for the radio show today, I mentioned Gwen Marable, who invited me to assist with the Kwanzaa celebration in Cockeysville, Maryland. And I mentioned to you that Gwen is a descendant of Benjamin Banneker, the African-American scientist who corresponded with Thomas Jefferson.
Right.
Had a whole set of, and he was assistant to the man whose name just flew out of my head, who the architect for Washington
D.C. Right. Yeah.
So all of those are the kinds of stories that are often told at Kwanzaa, right. just so, because so many African Americans don't know about those famous, those important African American inventors and scientists and teachers and
artists. Remember as a teacher, I remember if I ever did anything correctly from a human point of view in dealing with students from other cultures and stuff, especially with Black students. When my first experience in the public school was I tried to recruit people to my track team, and I remember a Black student said, "Oh, why? Because all Blacks are supposed to be fast and fast." And, "No, all Blacks aren't fast. In fact, at the time, I remember that I said, you know, one of the Olympic champions recently was a white Russian, so in a sprints. So I'm just looking for bodies to be on my track team. And if you're interested, fine. If you're not, you know, I don't care about your politics and stuff." Because it was in a place where a African American minister at the time was telling students from his pulpit not to do sports for the white man. Mm-hmm. And this was 1970. And and I was appalled at that because it just bothered me. But I made inroads because I would talk to the African American kids and joke with them. And I even encouraged them. I said, you know, when they would say things like, I remember hearing the word Kwanzaa in the late 70s or even in the 80s. And I said, when I first heard it, I said, "What is Kwanzaa?" I heard this celebration. And the guy said, "Oh, it's Black Christmas." and I said, "Really?" And another kid said, "No, it's not. It's not Christmas. It's a special celebration. And it's not a holiday. It's not about Jesus and all that. It's not Christmas." And, the conversation didn't go on very long, but I remember being shocked about it because it seemed like that the kids didn't know much about it.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so, I haven't been in a classroom for quite a while. So I don't know what it's like nowadays, but I do wonder about why, if the when it was started and it was purposely not going to have religion in it, why did they let it seep in? and that probably is a question that we could have a congressional hearing on, because those kind of things happen. You start out with a pure idea, impure, I mean, by, there's the idea, it's very simple. Oh no, this is not religion. And then somehow people bring it in.
And if you want followers, if you want to bring the community in, you have to adapt for what.
Oh, absolutely. I understand that. even though I'm not very religious, I'm not religious at all. I like churches because churches without preaching, church people do really good things. churches.
Only when they start talking, then.
I know of churches that have taken people in and given them sanctuary. Mm-hmm. And, I know of a Unitarian Universalist church in Utah who took in a family, a mother and children for more than 2 years and sheltered her and her kids in their building and made an apartment for her in the kitchen, all this stuff. And finally, she was able to get a real legal status in the United States because of those people's good works. I don't care what they believe in. I don't care what anybody believes in when they're doing stuff like that, because it doesn't matter. It's being good to another human being. And I just think that's wonderful. So.
Well, I have a relatively short poem that I'm going to share because it's from one of our griots. He's obviously a poet, but he's a storyteller, And I just came across it the other day. I had read it before. This is a man who's known as Our Son Paul in the Black storytelling group that he's a part of. But it was shared by Mama Linda Goss, who's one of the founders of the National Association of Black Storytellers. And she sent this out as part of her monthly email. And it's about ancestors. And because that's such a big part of the Kwanzaa celebration, I thought I would read this one. When an elder passes away, let it be a sign that we who are still here must keep them on our mind. Let their wisdom guide our life, let their words light our path. Every decision that we make, every tough and difficult task, take that wisdom and pass it on, for we shall be elders one day too. Tell the children what they said to bless the generations beyond you. Tell stories of their life again and again. It will fill you with love and pride and build dignity from within. Gather your elders that still remain. Love on them all you can. Honor their life now, each graceful woman, each resilient man. So when these elders pass away, there's no regret or unease. Within your grief and sorrow is relief and peace. And when the days of grief come upon you, and they will throughout the year, hold this hope inside your heart as you shed every tear. Their life was a beautiful story. They were blessed page by page. God's grace and mercy carried them up to their seasoned age. Now carry on their legacy, their love and their truth. Realize that when an elder passes away, they once lived among us, but now live within me and you.
Wow. Very nice.
He's a relatively young man, but he talks about ancestors frequently in his stories.
Yeah.
And there's one more little thing I wanted to say, that the seventh principle, Imani, which is Swahili for faith, was the name of a beautiful two-year-old girl that I knew in a childcare program that I worked in many, many years ago. And when I met Imani at that time, I only knew that her name was Swahili, that it was a word meaning faith. But I was moved that her parents had given her a Swahili name. And for me, that was a sign from her parents of their faith in her future. It was a commitment from them to work for a better future for their child and for all children. And I've since met several children named Imani, both boys and girls. And always it reminds me to believe in the future of all people, faith that we can build a better world for all our children. Wow. So she will always be important to me as a memory of somebody who kind of taught me a lesson, even though she was only 2 years old.
It's nice. Well, names are so important. I remember as a teacher, I was so appalled when some kid would come in with a strange name. I ran a class where I volunteered to mentor people on Wednesdays in chemistry in graduate school at University of Maryland. And I had a very nice young lady whose name was Sweet Charity.
Oh.
And I felt so bad for her. She hated her name so much. And, you know, and she said she thought her parents were wacky for naming her that. But and her parents were very strict and insisted when she was a kid not to call herself something else. They wanted her to be called Sweet. And she said she got abused for years, you know, because of that name. And I felt bad for her, you know, and I was always so, you know, I was so proud of my name. My name has always been considered difficult, but I remember a college professor suggesting to me I should change my name and make it Americanized. And I remember saying to him, and I know it bothered him because I was probably abrupt with him. I said, I'm proud of who I am and I'm proud of my name. Why would I want to change my name? Mm-hmm. And he was taken aback. you know. And this is a very nice man, very successful. He became interim president at the college years later for a short while. But I remember, I've always been very happy that my parents gave me a good Polish name, you know.
Well, there is something of a tin ear in that kind of response to an unusual name. You know, it's one thing if it causes the child pain or if
oh,
the
my
child
goodness,
is unhappy.
Yes.
But you never know what's going to happen. You know, I was right. named Fanny after my mother's beloved friend, who was kind of a godmother to me. But I also had an aunt named Fanny and a great aunt named Fanny. And there were other Fannies in the family. But as a kid, I hated my name because the kids at school used it to mean butt. So,
yes,
you know,
of course, they
would make jokes and sing songs. And
Oh, boy.
It didn't hurt me. It just annoyed me. It was very.
Sure. Right.
And it wasn't until I was an older teenager that I began to embrace my name and see it as a traditional
sure.
thing. And, then I started meeting Mennonites and Amish women named Fanny. And that also changed things because they clearly felt differently about their name and our name.
Right.
But there's a good argument for letting people name themselves at some point, as long as they get to change it over time, because people choose names that they're then horrified at themselves for choosing those names.
My 11-year-old grandson his name was John Patrick, and John Patrick Reed. But I started calling him Captain Jack, because the first thing I did present for him was made him a boat, like a pirate boat, you know, big enough for him to sit in. In fact, one of my favorite pictures is Captain Jack sitting in his pirate boat with a pirate hat on. But I remember him showing me some school papers when he was in third grade, I'm sure. And I said, why do you have a kid's paper? Why is John written on your paper instead of Jack? And he said, oh, I asked the teachers to call me John this year. And I said, oh, okay. Oh, that's your first name. All right, good. You know, but he has a number. He's called JJ, Jack, John, and a few other things that I can't even pronounce sometimes. And it doesn't matter. It depends. His grandmother calls him one thing. I call him a different thing. You know, his parents call him a different thing. So, that's fine. And I do think it's, you know, it's having names. I had nicknames for different times of my life, and I never mind. My nickname in high school was Zilch. I never minded that. As a teacher, I was Mr. Z for 40 years. Nobody ever tried to say my last name, you know. So, and people still look at me when I go to the doctors. One of my favorite things is when the nurse comes out to call me from their waiting room is they open the door and they stand there with a blank look. And then I stand up and say, that's me. Except that where I go now to the hospital in Berkeley Medical Center, they make it a point in every one of the doctor's offices, they ask you how you would like to be called. How would you like to be addressed? And so the nurses in that hospital, I found, will open the door when I'm going for an appointment and say, Stosh, which is great, because that's been my nickname since I was a baby. You know, it's a Polish affectionate nickname for Stanislaus.
John, do you want to say something before we close?
No, I just was wondering whether you had already closed.
Whether we knew what time it was. Okay.
I think we've been on for about 58 minutes, I think. Maybe really.
I'm going to close this out.
I got a call from my daughter, and so I had to.
You need to close.
But the call's over now, so I just. But I wasn't sure whether I'd stayed on too long or not. The call. But,
yeah. Okay. Well, this is Fanny Crawford.
And Stosh Leokowski.
We've been your co-hosts for the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. We are independent community radio broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Hagerstown, Maryland, which is where I sit. We offer our listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging you, our listening community, to share, preserve, and expand all of our stories. Thanks for listening today, and stay tuned for...
Well, it's Country Music Day, although I played so much George Jones earlier this morning that, you know, if you listen to too much of George, it makes you want to throw up, so...
that doesn't promote your story. I mean, you're
who's going to chop your kindling when I'm gone? You know.
Yeah. You have to have your ears in tune for that stuff.
Yeah. So I may change it and go back to the blues. I'm feeling very,
all right.
I'm not feeling very Christmassy. So.
Finn, you have an idea for next week for story for our show. Why don't we actually do